BioX is supported by the following community underwriters. Watershed, Roxbury's new front porch cafe on Main Street in historic Roxbury. Open for breakfast and lunch from 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. Proud to serve Abbotsford Road Coffee, New York's fresh roasted coffee specialists. Espresso, teas and wellness beverages, Johnny Ryan sodas, juices and local dairy, fresh and casual food. Pastries, toasts, pressed sandwiches, and happily scooping Jane's ice cream, once again for Roxbury. Watershed, coffee, cafe, community. Main Street in Roxbury. WatershedRoxbury.com. Mountain Flame in Arkville, featuring a range of products for home heating solutions. A variety of fireplaces, wood stoves, and gas and pellet stoves are available and on display. For sales and service, Mountain Flame in Arkville. Warming home since 1980. Details at mountainflame.com. Hannah Mountain Resort and Country Club, with 29 guest rooms, restaurant, and bar. Specializing in wedding packages, including rehearsal dinner, ceremony, reception, farewell brunch, and accommodations for guests. And golf memberships are available for Hannah's 18-hole championship golf course. Information at hannahcountryresort.com or 845-586-4849.
Hi, I'm Mark Bierman, host of Mark Bierman Sports here on WIOX Roxbury. I'm also a former nationally ranked tennis player and the current women and men's head tennis coach at SUNY Delhi. As director of tennis at Tennis Everyone for 15 years, I've been teaching kids, adults, and seniors from beginners to tournament-level players. Tennis Everyone, a supporter of WIOX, offers individual and group programs to players of all skill levels, as well as weekly women's, men's, and doubles clinics, and also partners players for off-site play. Information about lessons with Tennis Everyone at 845-254-4400 or mark@tenniseveryone.com.
Okay, you are listening to WIOX Community Radio, live and local, in the Catskill Mountains at 91.3 FM and MTC Cable Channel 20, and at 107.5 FM on the campus of SUNY Delhi, on smart devices through the Radio FM app, and everywhere at WIOXradio.org, where it's easy to donate. This is From the Forest every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m., with Ryan and John talk about a different forest-related topic since 2010. How about that?
How about that?
Yeah. John, how's it going?
Things are good, Ryan. How are you?
I'm good. You know, had a 4th of July weekend.
Yeah? Where'd you go?
Massachusetts.
You sound thrilled.
All right. You know, it's by the ocean. I'm not an ocean guy.
No?
No. Yeah, especially there. It's so cold. I mean, people just, they go in the ocean up to their ankles.
Isn't it a very rocky beach there?
Well, they got some beaches, but yeah, it's pretty much rock, you know. But it's really cold, and it's not like New Jersey, where you can go in. I mean, that's cold, too. It's in the 60s, I would imagine.
Right.
But there, it's colder. You know?
Yeah.
The kids are in, but they're all, like, blue-faced.
I feel like kids don't care.
Kids don't care. I didn't care.
Yeah, I don't remember me caring either. I mean, you could feel the cold, but not...
Yeah. You don't care.
You don't feel the extremities going numb.
Right. They don't care as much. I don't know why. I'm sure someone has a medical reason why that is. Must have something to do with their blood flow.
Yeah, I don't
know. Being much more than someone even in their 20s, you know? It has to be.
Right.
But what else? I saw some dead mountainsides of oak. I think the gypsy moth was out in Western Mass. So I'm sure that's working our way here, if not already.
I was out in the Finger Lakes. I saw oak that were defoliated from gypsy moths releafing.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
Yep.
They got hit pretty hard about 3 weeks to a month ago. I was getting a lot of text messages and such and phone calls from my wife's family. I'm wondering what the heck was going on. So I had to explain on everything. And also sycamore that were all releafed from anthracnose. They were also defoliated.
That happens a lot with sycamore. Anthracnose usually is bad when there's wet springs, and sycamore got its butt kicked. But something new with anthracnose was on maple trees, sugar maple this year. There's a lot of that going around.
A maple producer out of Delancey called me last weekend and asked, why are my maple trees turning brown? He's quite nervous.
You should have said to him, what'd you do? What'd you do, man?
Actually, he was calling me because it was in a new sugar bush he was adding tubing to. So he's put all his investment dollars going into a sugar bush. He thought, he's looking above him like, oh, my God, is it all going to die?
No, I mean, it might lower sugar content this coming year, but because, you know, less photosynthesis. But anthracnose does not normally kill healthy trees. Usually trees can take 3 years of defoliation. And then they might go backwards from there, but...
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. Did you do any fishing this weekend?
I did a little fishing. Went out yesterday. Thought I'd have some more luck with the rain, but I went to a new place, and, you know, I think it gets fished a lot. Hmm. So, caught some small little browns, but they're too small. Even I wouldn't eat them. So, yeah.
I'm not going to say it.
What?
Even you as a Neanderthal wasn't going to eat it.
Yeah, no. I got standards.
Yeah.
Even knuckle draggers threw them back.
Yep.
You know?
Well, we went out on a boat two different days, and we caught some nice lake trout. It was a change.
Yeah.
It was completely different than the stream fishing I'm used to. Vertical jigging between 70 and 100 feet of water.
Yeah, that's crazy.
So... pretty cool electronics. You can see the fish laying down there, and you drop your jig down, and you watch the drop, and you see the fish rise, and it's totally different. It's like a very active, because in a stream, you don't know what's going to hit. You don't know when it's going to happen. You're just casting and, you know, hoping for the best. And this is, you could see it happening on the sonar below you.
Oh, yeah.
And someone's calling out. He's like, he's going to hit it, going to hit it, going to hit it. And wham, there goes the rod tip bending down.
Whammo.
The water. Well, they're big fish. They're all... you know, 3 to 5 pounds or more.
So you just sit there, drink your beers, and watch the monitor?
Well, you got to be more active doing the reeling, but someone's watching the monitor, calling it out. Yeah. And I make it sound easy. It's really not. I mean, you could fish hard and not have any luck at all, but...
Yeah, I bet.
I think we pulled in 6 fish.
Yeah.
Really good time, though.
Did you guys eat them or what?
We had one last night.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, the thing is, they're so big. A meal for 2 people is half of 1 filet, and there's 2 filets on each fish. There's 4 meals in each fish.
Wow.
For 2 people.
And how'd you do them?
Julia grilled them yesterday with some just light seasonings. I couldn't even tell you. Maybe just salt and pepper. I'm not sure. I didn't cook it.
Yeah.
But it wasn't overpowering with anything.
Tin foil?
On the grill.
Cool. Yeah. I got some brown trout last week. Nothing is probably as big as what you'd use to bait the fish on those Finger Lakes.
Yeah.
But, I just do breadcrumbs, olive oil, a little maple syrup at the end, lemon juice, and in the oven, 375.
Yeah.
About 30 minutes. You know? I don't know.
Add a little maple syrup?
At the end. Otherwise, it'll burn. You know? It's really good.
That's one thing I don't do. I got to do more. I never think to add maple syrup on too many things.
What is wrong with you, man?
I don't know.
Huh?
I've always been that way. Always. I mean, I've always made it, and I don't eat that much of it.
I don't get it, man. You go through all this time, you make it, sit there for hours and days, and...
I enjoy it through other people.
Yeah. I have it on everything. I have it on popcorn. I'll even put it with a steak once in a while. I don't care.
I have it on a breakfast sandwich.
I have that every morning. Yeah. Breakfast sandwich. Absolutely. Yeah. I don't know. They don't have as much real maple syrup out there in eastern Massachusetts. I saw one guy outside waiting to get breakfast with a jug of maple syrup. You know, one of those guys?
No.
Can't go out for breakfast because he's insecure that they're going to have real maple syrup there. So he brings his own jug.
You saw someone bring their own?
Yeah. You stand outside.
A severe thunderstorm warning for southwestern Otsego County, east central Chenango County, until 7 p.m. At 6:10 p.m., a severe thunderstorm was located near Gilbertsville, or near Norwich, moving northeast at 20 miles per hour. Hazard, 60 miles per hour wind gusts and quarter-size hail. Source, radar indicated. Impact, hail damage to vehicles is expected. Expect wind damage to roofs, siding, and trees. Locations impacted include Oneonta, New Liston, Morris, Gilbertsville, Lawrence, West End, Emmons, Mount Vision, Gilbert Lake State Park, and Lathan's Corners.
That was a good show. We talked about our four favorite trees, and if I had to pick four, I think it was the hemlock, the sugar maple, the apple, and the red oak.
I was sugar maple, white oak, I think apple, and I forget my fourth already.
I think, but you know, I mean, it waxes and wanes between all of them. Sometimes it's shagbark hickory. I think if American chestnut were still around, it'd probably beat out red oak.
Hmm.
Yeah. I like red oak because it's just so nice to climb around. As, you know, as a tree climber, it's a really nice tree to get your line up into, and it's easy to climb. But
I think if I didn't have to handle so much ash in my life right now, it might be ash. I don't really like it right now. it's constant. It's always burning ash for firewood, always milling it for Casco Forest Association, and it's just, I don't know. I can go a year without it, I guess. But
yeah,
it gets so huge, and the big open grown ash trees you can find out there are just giants. That's something to appreciate.
Yeah. I've been injecting a lot of ash trees.
See?
I don't know.
Just think when you see it all the time, you forget it. You're jaded by it. But
yeah, they're nice trees. You know, I think I'm mixed on them because they're always growing next to an apple tree, always shading it out, you know, pissing me off kind of.
Well, the apple trumps for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. No, they're a nice tree. They're not bad. They're good for firewood, too. But, you know, I complain about them because it's all we burn. But favorite forest. So what is a forest? Well, a forest is a place dominated by trees. How do you like that?
Wow.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So it's a mixture of stands of trees. And trees are the keystone influencer of an environment because they dictate, they regulate how much sunlight is going to shine down. So once trees get established, they are influencing everything, right?
Yep.
You know, for example, I mean, if you have a sugar maple stand, only so much light can get to the forest floor, which means only certain plants can grow, which means only certain wildlife can grow. Hence the trees, they're the kingpins of the lot, you know?
Right.
Whereas hemlock, forget about it. Hemlocks are hogs, you know? I mean, I love them, but one of my favorite trees. But nothing can grow under them.
No, they change their ecosystem only to suit themselves. Selfish trees.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I was just writing an article about biodiversity, and I love hemlocks, but if you're talking about biodiversity, hemlock stand is not very diverse. I mean, nothing can grow under it but a monoculture of hemlock.
Yeah. Saprophytic mushrooms that feed off their roots, the Indian pipes.
Yeah.
Saw a bunch of those.
That's a weird plant. I don't even know if you consider that a plant. Is that still kind of like one of those gray area living things where they're not sure if it's a fungi or a plant? Or
maybe. I just called it a fungi, but I'm actually not sure.
I don't know either, to be honest with you. I forget now. Yeah, there's also that, reishi grows under on hemlocks all the time.
Yeah.
Lacquer mushroom. Pretty. Yep. Medicinal, I guess. I don't know. But, so, you know, there's a big difference between those two forest types, a hemlock stand, a sugar maple stand, and then you think of an oak stand. And it lets in a little more light. So there might be a shrub layer. Think like mountain laurel underneath it, maybe some lowbush blueberry in places. And then you think of a young forest, you know? And that's completely different light levels and what plants can grow there.
It could be a mix of all of the different tree species.
Yeah.
Depending on what's seeded in and how the wind blew.
Yeah, absolutely. So, and the other thing is, it's not just like the flora and fauna. Like, obviously, if you're, I won't say obviously, if you're in a mature stand, you're probably not going to see a lot of fawns bedded in the middle of the wide open forest because now they're susceptible to predation, I would imagine. Unless it's like a stupid fawn or something. Or I don't know. Well, right?
Yeah.
Usually you see fawns like bedded in, I see them in fern sometimes. I see them in mountain laurel. I see them besides people's houses and gardens.
Tall grass. Underneath a treetop if there's some good horizontal cover.
You're not going to see grouse in a mature forest usually. If there's some blowdown, you will.
Yeah, if there's cover for them and food.
Yeah.
Got to have both.
Yeah, otherwise they're just naked out there waiting for the fox or some other animal to pick them off. But this is, you know, there's also different feelings, John, that might be evoked by these different forest types. Come on, admit it.
I'm familiar.
You're familiar?
Very much.
How so?
Well, I'll talk about how I feel in some of my forest types I picked. I have three the first three that came to mind. I thought about it hard, but not like...
Yeah.
I went with the first three.
Yeah.
Because that's my feeling.
That's what you should do.
That's just what... Yeah, always go with your gut.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. That's what I did. The more I thought about it, the more it's starting to change. But I was like, no.
Yeah, that's exactly how
just
I was.
Just go with what you know. Yeah. All right, so let's go through these. All right, if you're just tuning in, you're listening to From the Forest every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m., Ryan and John. Tonight's topic is our favorite forest types. I'm just going to do three. So for me, the first one is the old sugar bush, you know? Something about an old sugar bush. That's awesome. So what is a sugar bush, you know? It's a place that used to be tapped for maple syrup. But I'm not talking about a modern-day sugar bush. See, modern-day sugar bushes, they're cool. I'm not saying they're not. But they're different because they're not really managed today because people have reverse osmosis, so they tap as many trees. They don't care what the spacing is between the trees or if they're thinned or not. So they're just going to filter that sap anyway and boost its sugar content, right? So it's basically like a timber stand with tubing in it.
Yeah.
Whereas in the 19th century, these guys didn't have filtration devices to filter the sap and boost the sugar content. So the way they would boost the sugar content is through spacing or increasing spacing between the crowns of the trees. So they want bushy trees, right? Trees with wide open crowns. And for instance, the trees I tap are like this in a horse pasture, and they can be 3%, some are even 4% sugar content. So that's like 33 or 25 to 1. Whereas a tree that's growing in a tight forest is going to be 50 to 1. You know, syrup to sap.
Yep.
Or sap to syrup. So these are kind of rare. It's a 19th century relic, really. You'll be walking along, and usually it's uphill of a person's old farmhouse, right? When you say you've seen these
all the time, uphill and past the best pasture, if that makes sense.
Yep.
Because usually directly uphill is a really nice hay field or pasture that's still maybe even in use. It's just above that, so it might not be 100 yards behind the house. You might have to go two or three.
Yeah, and kind of rocky, so maybe they couldn't hay it as well for whatever reason. And sugar maple's other common name is rock maple. People around here don't call it that much, but I noticed in southern New York, like Rockland County, Westchester, I've noticed people from there will call it rock maple more. But it doesn't care about that. It really just needs well-drained soil that are calcium-rich, and then it's doing fine. It doesn't like wet areas. It likes well-drained areas. Rocky's fine, and that's pretty much the majority of Delaware County and the Catskill Mountains, which is why we're in the heart of the sugar maple.
Yep.
So anyway, you'll see these trees. They're way too big compared to other trees. They're huge. A lot of them are rotting. A lot of them have woundwood or calluses where there used to be branches lower down. Now have been casted away as the forest has grown up around it. And they have a lot of character, you know. They're just really gnarly, tall trees. And I was just on a member's property for the Catskill Forest Association near Swan Lake, White Sulphur Springs area. And huge, biggest sugar maple I've ever seen. And that says a lot. I've seen a lot of big sugar maple in the Catskills. This was huge. And there was a bunch of them over a few acres, all big trees, spaced 50 feet or more apart. Mm-hmm. You know, some were already dead and on the ground. This guy was huge, man. I would say it was almost 60 inches in diameter. It was very big.
Wow.
I didn't have D-tape, but I have a picture of myself standing next to it. It's on CFA's homepage. But really cool tree. There's another one in Margaretville. You know the member on, it's near that Bilstall Road.
Yep.
And up above, yeah. You have these big sugar maples, and that one, because the deer browse has been less in the past, there's a lot of sugar maple growing up that got past the deer browse line, and there's just poles of sugar maple everywhere. You can barely see in between.
Right.
Growing from these trees.
Yeah, seeded in from them, and one day will be taken over by them.
Yeah. Been in Woodstock on a member's property, Hutchin Hill Road. Near the house is a rocky area, and there's sugar maples. There's just a lot of these in the Catskills.
Sometimes you can still find remnants of the old sugaring equipment up amongst them. I could think of three right off the top of my head in those types of situations. One was in Bovina. I just saw it last week. I found the door of the cast iron arch amongst some other metal debris. I think used to be an old tin tank that's now disintegrated and rusted away.
Yeah.
Another one in Margaretville area, and another one in Woodstock area I can think of right away.
That's pretty cool. I was on Forest Preserve near Millbrook, and, you know, getting up on the mountain, I don't know, maybe 2,500 feet in elevation, and big sugar maples. I start looking around. This hasn't been sugared probably since the mid-19th century or something, you know? And there's three laid-up rock walls next to each other. Have you seen this? I've been told it's for holding the pan.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So if it's really old, they did it merely by flat pan in the outside, out of doors. Mm-hmm. Not no cover, no sugar house. You know, they would bring the boiling to the trees instead of tubing it or getting a sled or a rock sled and bringing the sap down to the sugar house.
Yeah.
They would go up to it. And three laid up, and this is, they put a big pan on there, and always want to metal detect those areas, because you got to think, you got to stand outside in the cold and boil all day with a fire that is just, you choke on those fires if it's not fluid right when it's outside like that. They must have been dropping stuff, drinking a lot.
What's in there, right?
Yeah, right? I mean, Jesus. But that's pretty cool. So they're just a cool legacy from the past, from our agricultural past, that's in the Catskills that you won't find in a lot of other areas that aren't mountain areas. I'm sure if you went to the Berkshires or the Green Mountains, you would find these same things.
It's not uncommon to find them either. Pretty much up behind any old farmhouse on the hillside behind is going to have something like this.
Yeah, you're going to find a... you can usually find a plow field. That'll be the smoothest terrain where they're dumping rocks. You'll find a farm dump where they're dumping all their garbage, and you'll find a sugar bush.
Yep.
On these old farm sites. So That's one. Let me see if I got anything else to say about this. I think I covered it all. But, yeah, what's really cool is if one happens to come down. Now, there's one of these on Margaretville Mountain Road. And it was an old sugar bush. These trees were old. Anyway, this member had me take down a couple trees that were near a new shed he was putting in.
Yep.
Now, this is my old truck. My truck was rated, my little Toyota Tacoma at the time, was rated to carry 3,500 pounds. Not a lot. Small truck. I've carried firewood with it all the way from Margaretville, where I used to live, to Olive Bridge, where I now live, many times, because I was stupid and I didn't want to buy firewood, so I brought all my firewood with me. So I've hauled firewood with this truck many times in the trailer. Well, we cut down the sugar maple. I figured, I knew it was tapped, so I took some cookies out of it, which I'll talk about in a second. Cookies that show the old tap holes.
Yep.
But anyway, this tree was really old, man. I mean, it was growing so slowly. And anyway, it bent my springs. And, you know, I've carried sugar maple before. I've carried black locust loaded up my trailer before. This thing was so dense. And the only thing I can think of is that this sugar bush maybe wasn't thinned out as much as others. And because the rings were so tight. Anyway, when I did get the cookie out of the butt log towards the bottom there, it showed two different generations of maple producers. One was fairly recent, going back to the 90s, maybe 80s.
Yep.
Up until a few years ago, really. And the other was old, like late 1800s.
Yeah, we counted back. We found the oldest one somewhere around 1890, I think.
Yeah, pretty neat. And back then, they're using those short iron spiles, maybe?
Big, fat, wide.
Yeah.
Wide scar it left, so it was a big spile.
Yeah, short and stubby.
Yeah.
And the new ones were longer. Big, 7/16 or whatever, bigger, maybe. But pretty neat, you know, that once you tap that tree, the tree compartmentalizes the wound and wounds it off and... But that's there, like a chronology of what happened. So, and John, we did a European mount of a buck I got and put it onto the back of this cookie. So it's like a dial that you can look at on back of the buck there on the wall. And yeah, you can see that history. That's there forever. So these trees have a whole history they tell. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, very, very unique.
All right, your turn.
All right, so the first one I thought of. One of my favorites, and I don't get up to see it very often, but it's a balsam yellow birch mix. You find it starting on, if it's the right mountain, you're going to find it right around 2,800 feet, really get into it around 3,000, and that yellow birch is going to drop off to pure balsam 32 to 3,300, but it's that 300-foot sweet spot that's got the mixing forest types.
Yeah.
I like that transition. Sometimes there's a lot of storm damage up on that high up on the mountain, so the trees are generally short, letting in some extra sunlight, so you're going to see some other herbaceous growth growing in the understory. Yeah, witch hobble, maybe some grasses. Usually the mountain up that high is going to be very terraced, so you'll have steep ledginess areas and then flats, and then steep and flat, and on those flats, bedrock's usually shallow, not a lot of soils, and it pulls up some water. You get some coniferous swamp type action going on. It's just such a unique, neat area, and I hunt a mountain a lot where I access one side to get to the other where I like to hunt, and it's just a, you know, it's a 3.5 mile hike just to go where I want to start hunting that day, and I have to pass through this forest type to get where I want to go, and usually when I get there, it's just, I know, it's like I'm almost to my hunting grounds, I'm almost there, and by then I've been hiking on a ridgeline for a little over a mile at that point, and when I first hit that forest type of balsam yellow birch, I know to take a break, because if I don't break then, I just know me, I just like to go up and over to get to the other side and start hunting, right? I'm too excited to go. Yeah. If I don't take a break there, I'm whooped by the time I get to the other side, so I have a lot of time to sit there and I might spend 15 minutes and just sit and look at it, think about it. Sometimes I'll walk around one of those terrace slopes on look down some of the ledges and just relax for a minute. And we've talked about many times, you know, hunting's not even close to being just about hunting.
Right.
That's one of the best parts for me anyway. But and I've kicked out some big bucks doing that. I think
it's because they don't want to go in the balsam too.
I just think
they get pushed up against that balsam line sometimes.
What is? We know that deer are edge species. That's why we see them on edges of roads, edges of power lines, edges of our yards. They love the transitions. There's always food, a changing food type at a transition line.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. I mean, to the, an average person's eye, it just looks like forest. But that's change, and that's a hard edge to a deer, and that's the line.
Yeah, and you get the club moss growing in places. It's just a very pretty forest type. Nothing else. Coincidentally, I got to hunt that this year looking for the big one. I knew he was in there. And you could tell he loved that edge because on one side, a north-facing side or something, he could just run down through red spruce, big red spruce.
Okay.
And he was in the area you're talking about, like yellow birch and club moss, witch hobble, just yellow birch and what else? Some spotted red spruce and balsam here and there.
Yeah, it's not real diverse. You might, you get in the right type. You might find some cherry mixed in as well.
No, I think it is. It's definitely a transitional area because one side of the mountain will be different than another.
Yep.
It's a very strange area that, I haven't really thought about. Yeah, there's small bands in it. It gravitates up and down depending on aspect and stuff. It's kind of, I hate to say this because it's kind of like being in the Adirondacks in some ways.
Yep.
It's totally different. You won't find it anywhere else but that at that elevation.
It's a sweet spot, and I find that it doesn't last more than 300 feet in elevation change.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. I gravitate there a lot. My dad brought me there when he was teaching me how to hunt the big mountains when I was just a teenager, and he says, this is where you come, and you go one way, I'm going to go the other, and because the trail just goes straight up and over.
Yeah.
And he says, you go left around the mountain, I'll go right. Don't go up or down.
Just follow the band.
Stay in this type of tree line. And I didn't know at all what I was in. I mean, he told me, obviously.
Balsam. Some white birch, too, here and there.
Yeah, here and there. Not so much where I'm at, but yeah, in those types, you'll find it. And I don't know. I guess it's more nostalgia, but it made me pay attention to that type of that spot on the mountain where most people, I feel, if they're just hiking for the peak, they're in the last leg then, right?
Yeah.
So maybe they're not stopping and smelling the roses, so to speak. They're just hiking for the top of the mountain at that point. So
you also get these kind of open areas at that elevation.
Yeah, you do.
Sometimes it'll open up and you can see, which is kind of neat.
Yeah, and whether you see for a view or you just see across the open flat for 100 yards or 80 yards, it's just not as dense. It
right.
never is. As soon as you get to the balsam, though.
Forget it.
You're done.
Yeah.
And that's if you're not careful, if you're hunting a big buck, that's where he's escaping to.
Yeah. No, they're definitely in there. I believe that. I see more sign in the one area I hunt, which isn't far from where you are there on two mountains over.
Yeah.
There's a lot of deer sign there. They're in there. So it's I'm in their backyard. And
when people ask about this mountain, I tell them I've probably hiked it 100-plus times, but I think I've only seen the peak about a dozen because I get to that spot and I'm...
Yeah,
I'm not on the trail anymore, you know?
Yep. No, I don't blame you. Balsam's nice in that you can smell it. It's really nice when you get on top. There's no doubt. I like that. But, I agree. I was in that area this year, and I was. By the time you get up to that spot, like you're talking about, you're hot. And you don't want to sweat because then you can get cold. So you just sit. And I sat this area. It was just like you said, but if you walked off one shoulder, went all the hemlock.
Really?
Yeah, because, again, it's in that sweet zone where you go up 100 feet or down, it just completely changes.
Yeah.
And so I went in there because it was out of the wind and it was quiet, but I could see into where it was all white birch and hobble bush and yellow birch. So I figured maybe I'd get and I saw I was following a deer trail, so I just stopped there. But it's just so pretty to look at.
Yeah.
There's no doubt.
And if you're hunting, if you're not on the trail at this spot, even if you're hiking, it doesn't matter. But if you're coming up the mountain, not on the trail, below there, where I'm thinking of, is just from the, you'd be heading south. You'd be coming up the north-facing slope. And it is so thick with just beach whips.
The beach, this sucks, man. I mean, that's a problem, you know. As is, these beach trees die from the beach bark disease, you can't hunt in that stuff.
Nope.
You know?
Nope. So it's a real breaking point. A hunter sees it for sure. They definitely see it as a spot to at least slow down, and if not stop altogether.
Yeah, I thought I was going to see the big one there this year. It didn't happen.
Yeah?
I definitely found his bedroom. Didn't see him. I'm sure he saw me.
One year I made the effort to stick a trail camera up there and leave it, because there's no, you know, you don't get up there often enough to make it worth your while to help you actually hunt.
Yeah.
I just kind of wanted to know what was up there. And got a picture of the big one, and he was that.
Yeah.
I don't know if he lives up there year-round, but there's no doubt that's his retreating zone for...
Well, he could. You know why I think he could is, like you said, it's on the edge, and there's hobble. Not many deer like to go up there because of snow depth. But since he's a little bigger animal, maybe he can take it, that deeper snow, or he just knows it, or he's just a weird individual. As one biologist says, they're individuals. There's weird ones.
Yep.
And he does have food. There's hobble bush, which they like to eat. There's a lot of balsam on that edge. They love balsam.
Yep.
So there is stuff to eat.
Usually you drop off a few hundred feet on the north and northeast side, and you're going to find sugar maple.
Yeah.
And so it's an excellent, excellent food source, especially in the summer months.
Yeah.
In those types of stands.
So, yeah, I agree with that. But, all right, well, we're running out of time. We got to get going, man.
I know.
We've only got one apiece. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to From the Forest every Wednesday, 6 to 7. We're talking about our... three favorite forests here. I don't know. We'll see if we get it. If we don't, whatever. All right, so number two. Mine was an old sugar bush. Yours is, what would you call that? I don't know, boreal forest. It's kind of like a boreal forest in some ways. And
I guess.
But it's not balsam. Without the solid balsam and red spruce.
Right, because some mountains stay hardwoods to the top of the ridge. It's got to be that solid, dense, coniferous edge.
Yeah.
Where it transitions from northern hardwoods to coniferous at the top of a mountain.
I started walking that edge out of laziness, and then I was like, there's more sign here. Because I didn't feel like going up and over through the balsam one time, and I was like, I ain't doing that. So I just started doing contouring around the ball.
Exactly.
And I was like, there's freaking a ton of sign on here. What the hell am I doing?
Yep.
Anyway, let's not give away all the secrets. Not that it's benefited me at all.
Yeah.
You know what? Power to it. You want to find them up there?
If I see anybody up there, that's the other thing. I've never run into anybody, which is a great thing. So
yeah.
If I see someone now, watch out. I'm going to have a word with you.
It's just hard hunting. Even if they're up there, it's just still hard hunting.
If you're up there before 10, 11 o'clock in the morning, you really got up early to get there, you know?
Yeah.
It's tough. It's a long walk to get there.
It is. Yeah. Absolutely. So the second one for me is a hemlock stand. Hemlock stand, man. I mean, I don't think there's a better place to pitch a tent. If you're thinking about camping, it's litter-free for the most part. It's very clean. It's a tidy forest, you know? You don't even have to have vacuum, you know? It's just very clean. And so that's nice. You don't have to, you know, like if you're putting out the footprint of your tent, nothing's really going to harm it. But more importantly for me, well, the other thing is it's so shady. You know, it's out of the wind.
Yep.
It's, which I hate wind. I can't stand wind. I hate the sound of wind. I don't like it. If it's in the wintertime, if you're doing winter camping, I don't really do that anymore, but there's always less snow. That's why deer yard up in it in the winter. In the summer, it's always cooler. And the biggest reason why I like hemlock stands is especially when they're next to a brook trout stream. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if I see a nice waterfall with a plunge pool and hemlock rimming the edges, I think that stream is definitely troutable. And it's nice. Unfortunately, a lot of the hemlocks are dying, but in some of these areas they're not. But a lot of them have, in some of the streams I go to, are dying out and letting in light, and black birch now is regenerating under a lot of those areas. But you can't beat hemlock next to a brook trout stream. They also, you'll find that the roots kind of follow the edge of the stream and really hold the stream together. And I don't know. Anecdotally, I feel like they're really good for erosion control, because some of these streams I've been on, they just never seem to be as impacted from flooding.
Yeah.
When they have a lot of hemlock on them. I've gone to one of them, and it's just, it never looks different, you know? It's just totally intact. But that's just anecdotal.
I like hemlock, especially when you're on a long walk or hike. You could just make time. It's such a relief to walk through a hemlock stand. And not that you have to run through them. It's just, it's almost effortless compared to what you just came out of, whether it's beach whips or...
I've been tripping.
Yeah, I've been tripping over fallen logs, even if you're walking through fern. You know, there's so much crap in the fern.
Yeah, if you hunt like the Schwalunk Ridge, mountain laurel.
Mountain
laurel. Hemlock stand would be like a beautiful thing.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, no, it's, I can get that feeling. I don't do a lot of camping in general, but I don't do a lot of camping in hemlock, so I can't join you there, but I can see how it'd be a good spot.
Yeah. I don't know. I feel like the bears go to them a lot, too, because you wouldn't think so. There's not much food there, but you know what they do? It seems like they always go there and... Maybe to cool down. I don't know what they're doing, but they always flip rocks over in hemlock stands. Now, maybe it's because you notice them more because it's open.
Maybe.
But, man, they are always flipping stones over in those hemlock stands and getting at grubs and whatnot, seems like to me.
Hmm.
The only place I ever found a bear skull was in a hemlock stand. It was of a cub.
Wow.
Yeah. Where I got attacked by a bear. I'm not going into that story again, but it was in a hemlock stand.
Right. Right.
You know, damn bear. So, that's my second.
All right. Anything else?
No.
That's it. So, my second is like your first, but different. It's not the old sugar bush. It's the mature sugar maple stand. And not just any. You know, not one that's ready for harvest right behind a farmhouse because it got abandoned 50 years ago. I'm talking
old growth.
Older growth,
yeah.
Higher in elevation, where the slope is get steep, 30% slope.
Yeah.
Usually in the center of a bowl that's got a stream or at least a heavily flowing spring, something with constant water in the center of it. Trees are tall, 80 feet or more.
Sounds like ginseng.
Average diameters are getting 20, 24 inches or bigger, and big crowns.
Yeah.
That type of forested stand, and not usually in the wintertime or the fall. I'm thinking about this in the summer months.
Yeah,
it's kind of like the hemlock stand, a little cooler, usually on a northerly aspect, probably something like that.
Some of the best regeneration,
awesome
as far as spring flowers.
Yep, and a lot of understory vegetation. Not much of a midstory; it doesn't need one. Too dense anyway.
Yep,
you can see 100 yards or more. Just a nice spot to sit and look at the trees, if nothing else.
Well, it's funny you say that. So when I was thinking of the old sugar bush, I went back and forth between those two, actually.
Did you?
Yeah, because, you know, that's where you find it's such a healthy forest as far as the regeneration in those upper elevation sugar maple, old growth sugar maple stands.
Yeah.
It's above the deer browse. Deer browse pressure is a little less, so you get a lot of really healthy blue cohosh and trilliums and ginseng sometimes, and it's just a really cool forest. The other one, the fern, maidenhair fern?
Yeah, maidenhair fern, blue cohosh,
doll's eye,
yeah, or white beansberry.
Real quick, back to the, I'll just mention a couple sentences, but the other reason why the hemlock stand and is because it's just such a historical thing with the tanning.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times you'll find, you know, remnants of that through charcoal and stuff, but I digress. But yeah, that's definitely a peculiar forest type, is that old sugar maple stand, the Catskills.
Yeah. I don't know. It's just every time I walk into one, I just stop and I look around. Sometimes if I'm in a hurry, you know, walking up a mountain or something up to get to a ridge, it might take me 10 minutes to walk across the little bowl of that stand, and I just kind of look around for a minute.
I do a lot more now than I used to, because I'm usually look for maybe a ginseng or something.
Yeah.
I don't really pick it, but man, if you can eat a leaf, just one wakes you up. You know, I feel like it has some pain relieving qualities to it, so that's kind of nice. But you know, I don't get into the whole picking it or anything for money or anything, although I don't, you know, I think it can be a good thing if it's done right. But if you're just tuning in, you're listening to From the Forest every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Tonight's topic is our favorite forest types. We got one more forest type to cover after the break.
All day I've faced a barren waste without the taste of water. Cool water. Old Dan and I, with throats burned dry and souls that cry for water.
Water.
Cool
water.
Clear
water.
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 Keep
water.
On moving, Dan. Don't you listen to him, Dan. He's the devil, not a man. And he spread the burning sand with water. Dan, can you see that big green tree where the water's running free and it's waiting there for me and you?
Clear water.
The nights are cool and I'm a pool. Each star's a pool of water. Cool water.
Water.
But with the dawn I'll wake and yawn and carry on to water. Dan, don't you listen to him, Dan. He's the devil, not a man. And he spread the burning sand with water. Dan, can you see that big green tree where the water's running free and it's waiting there for me and you?
The shadows sway and seem to say, tonight we pray for water.
Cool water.
And way up there,
don't you listen to him, Dan. He's the devil, not a man. And he spread the burning sand with water. Dan, can you see that big green tree where the water's running free and it's waiting there for me and you?
Dan's feet are sore, he's yearning for just one thing more than water.
Cool water.
Water.
Like me, I guess he
like the guy in the background just repeats water.
How did he get that job?
I don't know. It's awesome. Imagine if you're walking around your old growth sugar maple stand and all of a sudden these guys are playing up there. Freak you out.
Yeah, it'd be an experience. Holy cow.
So that's the Sons of the Pioneers, 1948. So pretty cool song. So anyway, this is From the Forest every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Talk about a different forest-related topic. Tonight's topic is our favorite forest. We've covered two. Out of the three, we got one more each. So my last one is pitch pine, white rock, and blueberry.
Schwabble to me, Ridge.
Yeah, this is, to me, one of the most peculiar forest types anywhere around. I mean, I'll be honest, to this day, there's nothing like it. When you're on top of the ridge, the Shangham Ridge, there's you feel like you're in a different world. And I grew up in the Walk Hill Valley, and you ride your bike up, and there's your typical maple, beech, birch, maybe some hemlock, oak, hickory, elm, white ash, and you start getting above 1,000 feet, and then when you get on top of the mountain, which the highest point on the mountain is around 2,200 feet, it's all pitch pine and blueberries, chestnut oak, and a lot of white rock. And what's really cool, areas that have been burned the most or have the strongest legacy of burning are really heavy to stunted or dwarf pitch pine. And these pitch pine are really artistic looking. They can be as old as 150 years and be 5 feet tall.
Wow.
Yeah. They're just growing on, you know, bedrock just about. waiting for a fire. These are the most fire-resistant trees there are. So when you take the lowbush blueberry, which are also a fire-dependent species, and they turn red in the fall, and then you have that really deep green needles of the pitch pine, and you mix that in with a really white rock, it's pretty. It's really nice. And the smell of pitch pine, you feel like you're out west, you know, ponderosa pine or something. There's just nothing like that. And it's extremely edible. So we're talking about old trees before, old forest. When we think of forest, a lot of us, as we had Dan Duran on from Rowan University, if you do a Google search or web search, think of an old forest, deep, dark. You know, James Fenimore Cooper's Last of the Mohicans, running around chasing deer, right?
Yeah.
Actually, I think we had that backwards. I think it, the ancient forest is not the trees, but the forest type. And I think if you were to go back 500 years ago, this is my process. I'm not the only one, though. But the old forest type would be that what's on the Shawangunk Ridge, what human beings created for thousands of years. And why not? There's no food, or there's not as much food in that old forest that you see in Last of the Mohicans, where they're chasing deer. There's more food in the forest you find on the Shawangunk Ridge that humans have perpetuated through burning. There is so much food up there, man. It's crazy. I mean, when I was an assistant forest ranger for the D.C., I started seeking out these areas more because I wanted to hear more bird sounds, more wildlife. Chestnut would grow from the sprouts. We know chestnut trees die from the blight, but they would still sprout up from the sprouts. They would sometimes fruit or produce nuts. Tons of blackberries, tea berries, boatloads of blueberries. I had a blueberry rake. You could take blueberry rakes after a burn and pick these things. For wildlife, you have tons of acorns. You have a rare oak tree that you don't get anywhere else called bare oak that needs fire. It's a really shrubby oak. It's just really cool. It's an open-like forest. When you get a lot of burning, it'll be like these open blueberry meadows. There's nothing like it. A lot of this has grown back with sassafras and red maple, and it needs to be burned again if you want to perpetuate it. But you know, it's just such an edible forest that we know humans wanted. And they've done lake sediment studies in this area. This lady named Pettit or Petit, I forget how you say it, but she did lake sediment studies out of some of the sky lakes up there and found that humans were burning for thousands of years, perpetuating that forest type. And it's an easy place to burn because fire burns uphill, so the surrounding valleys, it made the ridge perfect. And it's a very similar forest you'd find in Long Island or New Jersey, where humans were around burning as well, or Lake Champlain. And so, anyway, that's my thing. Fire basically stopped 1940s. You know, you have refrigeration bringing in blueberries, and people no longer were selling berries off the mountain commercially after burning. So refrigeration kind of halted that. And Smokey the Bear, man. Smokey the Bear and the Forest Service did a huge propaganda campaigns throughout the South, mainly in the South, where they burned more, and put a halt to that. I mean, they really hit hard, you know, and they had a lot of used World War II equipment to put out fires as well. So, but anyway, you can still see that ancient forest type to this day. Very edible, human-created pyrogenic landscape. But, John?
Well, I think we got very similar minds the way we thought about our forest types, because I did the same thing. I went to the forgotten forest, when most people think of a forest, and the young forest. This is what I'm thinking of as an abandoned agricultural field or pasture, not old, maybe abandoned 10 to 20 years ago. I'm not talking dense with sugar maple or red maple saplings growing in that you got to weed yourself through. Yeah. It's still young enough that it's got everything left. You know, it's got trees coming in, probably some hawthorn, an apple, maybe some aspen. It's likely got a stream or a spring through the lowest depression of it. High bush blueberry might still be present. Grasses are still there, but forbs have moved in as well. It's just this ultimate diversity. It's all there. Nothing's lost yet, but everything's gaining. Yeah. And I think that's a really cool forest type. You gotta remember, forests are just a sliding time scale. And one day they got to start it at day one. And it's still a forest at day one.
So much more food in those younger forests. So much more diversity. And I know, and if it's big enough, the disturbance, it can overwhelm the deer browse. So that's why you get all this diversity. If it's not big enough, it won't overwhelm them. You'll just get ferns.
Yeah.
Stilt grass if you're low in elevation.
Yeah, the areas I'm thinking of are just, you know, where there's waves of farm abandonment occurring all at the same time.
Yeah.
So maybe every farm in the valley has been abandoned in the last 20 years or 30 years, and here's all their fields coming back now into forests, and you are getting growth. And you're getting, you know, a lot of wildlife there, too. A lot of deer there, a lot of... you go for a ride up one valley I'm thinking of, and this time of year, if you went for a ride every night this week, I'm sure 3 out of the 7 nights you saw bears, you saw turkeys, mm-hmm. and you saw deer, and everything's there. Nobody's visiting.
Yeah. Went for a walk during lunch up a power line. Margaville kicked out a nice buck.
Did
you? Laying in the ferns in the heat. He wanted that cover over the heat, I guess.
Hmm.
I was surprised. He was right next to me.
Wow, crazy buck.
Yeah.
You'd think they'd be in the shaded sugar maple stand today.
That's why. I was like, what the hell is this? This guy. Crazy guy. It's freaking hot. It was hot during the day.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah. He was playing in the power line and in the ferns and everything. You know, some down brush and stuff.
Yeah, cool. But well, he's got food there.
That's just mimicking what you're saying, though, yeah.
Just got to stand up and feed for 5 minutes and lay back down.
Yeah, it's going to be a big one. Some big bases on him.
Oof.
But this is all the time we got from the forest. We're talking about our favorite forest types. We had to, you know, we had our favorite tree species a while ago, so we had to cover forest types. We'll have to do it again because it seems like we can fill a show pretty fast with it. But it's all the time we have, and see you next week. Is next week Gary Mead or not? I don't know. Is that third Wednesday?
I think it. No.
No.
No, not yet.
It's not. All right, forget it. See you next Wednesday.
See everyone. Good night.
Oh, the neon lights were flashing and the icy wind did blow. The water seeped into his shoes and the drizzle turned to snow. His eyes were red, his hopes were dead, and the wine was running low. And the old man came home from the forest. His tears fell on the sidewalk as he stumbled in the street. A dozen faces stopped to stare, but no one stopped to speak. For his castle was a hallway, and the bottle was his friend. And the old man stumbled in from the forest. Up a dark and dingy staircase the old man made his way, his ragged coat around him as upon his cot he lay. And he wondered how it happened that he'd ended up this way, getting lost like a fool in the forest. And as he lay there sleeping, a vision did appear. Upon his mantle shining, the face of one so dear, who'd loved him in the springtime of a long forgotten year, when the wildflowers did bloom in the forest. She touched his grizzled fingers and she called him by his name. And then he heard the joyful sound of children at their games in an old house on a hillside in some forgotten town, where the river runs down from the forest. With a mighty roar, the big jet soars above the canyon streets, and the con men con, but life goes on, for the city never sleeps. And to an old forgotten soldier, the dawn will come no more. For the old man has come home from the forest.